Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we create an environment for founders to thrive through education, inspiration, and a supportive community. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host today. Coming from a background in boating industry, our next guest has been deeply ingrained into the warranty industry for over 12 plus years, providing superior customer service to his clients in need and making the Inc. 500 or 5,000 just recently. Jeff Shelton is a wealth of knowledge. With his highly ambitious, analytical, and vibrant personality, his energy is highly contagious. His ability to build authentic trust and create a relaxed and fun environment for others around him are some of his greatest strengths. Join us today as we welcome Jeff Shelton to the Founders Odyssey podcast.
Hello, appreciate the kind intro.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just so happy to be here with you, get to know you a little bit better, and share you with our audience. The biggest question I ask for a lot of founders, the first one is, what is entrepreneurship and what does it mean to you?
For me, I think one of the things like that most attracted me or kind of got me down this lane of entrepreneurship is really just control over my income, my environment, and just, you know, all aspects of my work, you know. And I think it's, I hear a lot of like entrepreneurs kind of knew that from the gut that they'd be an entrepreneur from day one, or, you know, they knew what their path was. I definitely was not one of those. I think I started out sort of like in an entrepreneurial role where I had several like commission type of jobs. So you could have actual control over your income. So that's kind of what got me into somewhat of a more entrepreneurial type of work. And then, you know, I really saw a better way of doing something and kind of like to be able to have that creative freedom is really what I think it really was more than anything, you know, more than, you know, the work, more than the pay or anything. It's just, you know, being able to decide and have that, you know,
yeah,
creative outlet, I guess
you could say. A lot of people say, I mean, there's the creativity, the freedom that it gives you. You know, I get that answer many times. I mean, in many different ways, right? And it sounds like that's the road that you've taken. Why do you think it was, you know, well, let's just talk a little bit about your family life, Minnesota, how it all began for you. And then, you know, we'll talk about some inspirations that you've had in your life as well.
I was pretty lucky that my dad was a property owner. So I got a little bit of a taste of what it was like to own, you know, your own business. So he had marinas on the St. Croix River up in Minnesota, and still does. And I knew I kind of wanted to be in the outdoor space. I just kind of, you know, when you graduate from college, I had a business degree. I was kind of saying like a business degree, so you still don't know what you want to do. So I just, you know, you got to pick something. So I kind of got into the, business finance major too. So I'm like, the warranty industry really kind of looked appealing. You know, I knew some people that worked in it, and I used to go up to dealerships and set their, you know, their dealerships up with their warranty programs. I really kind of got to a taste of how that business worked. And then I just saw, you know, I really just saw an opportunity to do something better than anything that was out there previously. So kind of sparked a few ideas in my mind and started just trying to learn more about business and more about this industry and bringing it to life.
So would you say your dad was a big inspiration? I mean, did you have any other mentors in high school that kind of brought them underneath their wing, or as well in college?
I think probably our family business was the biggest kind of eye-opening, like, or at least we had, like, you know, when you're learning in business school, it's hard to learn, like, when it doesn't apply to you, but at least I could see what was applying to what he was doing, you know, and how, like, finances worked, and how to kind of, like, set up your very own, you know, work schedule, and kind of how to create a plan and stick to it. So it's, you know, I think most of my mentors were really actually, you know, people in the workplace, but more than anything, I kind of sought out, I read a lot of books, did a lot of audibles. I traveled a lot. So I think like back in the day when I used to drive a lot, this was more just like downloading a lot of business books, a lot of personal development type of stuff. And, you know, you can only listen to the radio so much. So just kind of feeding my mind with, you know, I think the people that I've never met, you know, that were really, really good influences on me and kind of opened my mind to ideas that really wasn't around my social network at the time. I think that would probably.
Let's dive into that a little bit more as far as the education inspiration that you know, took from some of these books. And do you have a few books that have really stood out to you that have helped you on your journey?
You know, I think some of the classics, like when I first started out, was like, you know, how to win friends and influence people. I did, because I was in sales, I did a lot of Zig Ziglar back in the day, learning how to actually kind of pick apart and create a script and come up with a plan of what you were going to say, you know, anytime you met with somebody. So he was very, very big influence on me. Tony Robbins, of course, like kind of like OG of personal development. I think I kind of got a little bit more into like psychology, but through the sales route, because I think that, like, you know, bringing ideas to life or influencing people is just all psychological. And a lot of psychologists, but, you know, Brian Tracy, you know, one of the great sales trainers from back in the day. And I don't know if you ever remember doing that, but, you know, you used to go online and actually kind of download, like, you know, you stole the free music. I used to steal not only free music, but like I used to download like seminars and stuff like that. And
live. Yeah, events. I remember looking on YouTube. My biggest thing was, you know, how to the art of persuasion. That was number one. Just loving the understanding of the psychology of persuading someone, you know. And not necessarily in a bad way, because it was always about, well, how can I make this sale? But how can I also, you know, persuade them into an area that I know that I can meet their need, because they've expressed the need. So, you know, I want to be good at my job and I want to close a sale. So how do I understand them, you know, and understand how to really provide that value? And it sounds like you've done that very well in your industry as far as providing value. So you've had a lot of experience there with learning. And, you know, what is some of the biggest things that you learned, you know, through the family business as you guys were growing up? Is there anything that stood out to you as far as organization, setting goals? You did touch on some of that.
You know, I think a lot of it was some of the biggest things that I've kind of took away was, you know, you can, especially when you're trying to, you know, I think one of the underestimated, I guess, or less talked about things in sales are really the sales that you don't make and that you shouldn't make. You know, and I think a lot of times we focus in on just trying to get the deal done, try to get the sale, that no matter what, is we're really trying to persuade them into buying our product. But when I think I kind of take a step back and say, no, my real ambition, my real goal is to try to serve that client. And actually asking questions to try to eliminate people from possibly buying your policy because it's not a right fit. And, you know, I don't think my dad was too much of a salesperson, but what he did very, very well is he just treated people correctly and how he would want to be treated. And a lot of times, like if, you know, what he was providing wasn't a good fit for him, or, you know, he wanted to, you know, maintain that integrity with, you know, everybody that worked with him. And a lot of times it was just say, hey, you know what, this didn't work out. Like, I don't think we're a good fit for what you're looking for, you know, with your boat, or what, you know, the type of boat that you're looking for, or, you know, a place to store it. Like, here's a better place, you know, he'd refer them to the right place to go and really build yourself as, you know, a trustworthy person. Cause I think like one of the biggest things that I've learned in business is your reputation precedes you. So no matter how good I am at sales or whatever, especially if you have a reputation for being good at sales, like that puts people off, and that's kind of scary. And the best thing you can do is really make sure that you take care of people and do the right thing, even if it doesn't financially work out for you in the moment, because if you the main thing that you're looking for is to gain people's trust. So I could be the worst salesperson in the world, technically speaking. I might stutter and I might whatever, you know, I could screw it up. But like, if you know that doing business with me is something that like, I will never recommend something, or I'll never, you know, I'll always treat you, you know, better than anybody else, and I'm fully honest, transparent, and, you know, really look for serving my clients, I think that goes further than any type of like clothes that you might have, or, you know, anything you could possibly say. Cause, you know, I just think it's making sure you have a clean reputation and trust with people.
That's good. I know, you know, ways that there have been some negative, attributes, or not attributes, but there have been some negative connotations in regards to sales and whatnot. You know, how would you dispel those myths? And, you know, how are you a little bit different? I know you said you really focus in on understanding the customer. You know, can you shed a little bit of light on the unethical process of sales?
Yeah, and I think what gets the negative connotation with sales is I kind of just like to reframe it of like everything's a sale. You know what I mean? Like making your wife happy. You know, obviously we went to your retreat, which is a couple's retreat. Guess what? Like, I'm trying to sell my wife every single day on loving me. You know, I'm trying to, you know, if you have kids, you're trying to sell your kids on, you know, making the right choices and living a good life. And if everything is, you know, for the good, I was like of like ecology, if everything's for the good of, you know, yourself, the person you're talking to, you know, your community, everything, you know, is in alignment, then really sales per se becomes easy. And I think the challenge that if there is a negative connotation with sales, it's that like it's the objective is to sell. I think you just kind of need a reframe, and it's just like, what is your objective? If somebody comes to me and wants to buy something, a product of mine, and they say, yeah, I want to buy it, and I'm like, but they don't really understand what it is, or it's not a right fit. That's what a true salesperson does, is say, no, you know what? I think you might want to try something else. This is not what you think it is, or here's what we actually do. Here's our like market that we're in. I don't know if you exactly fit that. And people, that goes a long ways. Yeah. So I think it's really understanding what your objective is. And once it's eco-friendly, I guess you could say, I think of ecology, like once it's the best for everybody else, it's people can see that in who you are, and it comes across as very, very because it is genuine. And I think that's where the issues are, is like when you have the wrong intent.
Yeah, and that's something I've seen from you. You know, your intent to really just get to know people, and, you know, I could imagine just definitely during a sales process, and you being the leader of your company, sharing that with your team, you know, and selling them on a vision of a culture and you know, the foundation that you've built there. Well, that's probably why you made the Inc. 5000. So, share with me a little bit about the present and, you know, what you're excited about and how you're building the current culture within your company.
Yeah. You know, and I think as far as like the culture, I think really what we try to do for our customers is, you know, make their life, as far as like, you know, we specialize in the RV industry. We're just trying to make their life easier. Having breakdowns is extremely, I've had a lot of breakdowns, and it's like, it's extremely nerve wracking. It's frustrating. It's the difficult aspect of that RVing lifestyle. So financially paying for that is obviously what we do. That's the core of our business. But what we really want to do is get into other areas to better help the customer. And one of that, you know, particular industry that I'm looking at is, you know, we created a website called RV Repair Direct, where it's a site that people can go to and leave honest feedback for various repair facilities repair facilities that, you know, that have used our programs without any hitches. We can leave reviews. And really what we're trying to get more into is the more small mom and pop independent repair facilities, because we do know that there's a lot of people out there that have their own small business that do really good work on repairing RVs that can save people money. However, they're not the greatest, you know, marketer. They're just good at repairing RVs. So if we can send our clients, set people up directly with those repair facilities and those independent, like small independent shops that can do like on-site service, you know, mobile techs and stuff like that, putting those two together, I think is going to be just a huge added feature to what we do. And, you know, and to be honest with you, I don't know how we're going to necessarily monetize that, but I think it kind of comes back to, yeah, I'm sure we'll find that opportunity a little bit down the road, but we are in that space. We're already paying for repairs. Customers need the repairs, and we're just vetting out the best repair facilities based on our feedback and feedback of our clients. So putting those two together is the first step. And then, you know, you can think about the monetization. Yeah. A little bit later.
As you know, in business and everyone out there, you guys are continuing to find problems and you're providing solutions. And, you know, Jeff here has found a problem and he is wanting to put together a solution, already has put together a solution. And now he's using technology to advance that forward, really to, you know, help those mom and pop businesses out there. So that's a great idea, Jeff. Let's talk a little bit about your team and some of the things as a founder that you have found difficult as you have navigated the expansion of a company. And, you know, that's something that I know that you've gone through. So could you shed some light on that?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that's kind of difficult when you're growing, you know, especially if you're trying to grow quick, is a lot of the, you know, figuring out the systems and the processes. As I kind of identify myself a little bit more as a salesperson or kind of like the head of the company that, you know, shakes hands and kisses babies, more or less. So the organization side of it is always something that I've struggled with a little bit, and being able to train people to do the specific positions in our company. But one of the things that has really helped us out now as we started to scale is, you know, using technology, like recording stuff like this, interviews, and how-tos is typically how we use it. So when somebody gets hired on for a specific position, what we can do is we have a reference library of videos, documents, and all the stuff that they can do to train them into that position that doesn't require us to do it one-on-one. You know, and then you can create quizzes afterwards. And that's actually a pretty big game changer, because if somebody, like, to use the instance, like if somebody left and, you know, you had somebody in a position that was going to leave, all right, well, now you got to hire, if you're lucky, you can hire somebody before that person leaves to train them in. But now that person's out training and not actually doing that job. And that's the best case scenario. So, you know, really making sure that you document the training to bring people up to speed, and also as a reference tool, because once, if we forget, we know where those documents live. That has been a really, pretty big game changer, but it does take time to create. So I think it's been
corporate LMS. You know, it's a corporate LMS, and you're, you know, taking education and systems and putting that together. Share with those out there that may be at that precipice of understanding, or at least they're looking to expand to more people within their either sales environment, or doesn't have to be sales necessarily, but they've got maybe 10 to 20 people as a part of their organization or more. Do you have any specific tools that you could share?
You know, the one site that I actually use, I used to put all my stuff in files, but there's a program called Kajabi, where my wife actually does it because she creates courses where you can actually charge money if you wanted to teach, you know, whatever your specialization is. And you can, it's a really good format where they allow you to upload your videos and you have specific logins and you can track people along their journey and see what they've actually completed. So that was kind of a really nice game changer for as far as a platform that I could use. So I could see when somebody saw something, and we've let people go when they're like, yeah, I read it or whatever. And like, dude, we know, you know, like you didn't get past the training part, you know, because this is kind of, it's on your own. So tracking that was really big for us. That was, and then just really making sure that we keep it up to date among all of our people too. And kind of revisiting it to make sure that, because, you know, information on your company changes periodically. So,
yeah. Well, share with us a little bit of, you know, some trials that you've had as a company and how you've been able to overcome that. You know, you've got adversities that come to you right and left as a CEO of a company, continually, you know, putting out fires, really, right? And you're herding cats sometimes. I'm not going to say that, but. but yeah, what, you know, what are some things that you've gone through? But what are some ways that you've kind of overcome them as a company?
You know, I think turnover is always a big one too, especially when you don't, you know, with key positions. That's one thing that just kind of comes to mind. And, you know, have really making sure that understanding who's on your team, obviously trying to make your people happy. You know, I think that's to eliminate the turnover to begin with. But I think it's been just one of the things that we kind of constantly do that a lot of companies don't necessarily actively think about is making sure I have a pipeline of people that could come in should we lose a person, you know, in a key position. And having, you know, obviously, like I spoke on the training mechanism to fill that to help bring them up to speed. But, you know, I think it's, you know, first starts off with, you know, just the turnover issue or any, because in this market, I think most everybody can kind of relate to the difficulties of hiring people and finding good people, but, you know, staying proactive on knowing who might be interested down the road. And then also trying to eliminate that turnover from the very beginning and staying in contact with your employees, you know, meeting them one-on-one, but I'm a little bit more fan, bigger fan of the less formal one-on-ones, kind of the chit chat, like, hey, having lunch, hey, what's going on with you? And getting a pulse on your team to understand where your needs might be at any given moment, because I'm sure I'm not the only person that have lost people that have been really important to the infrastructure. You know, it's fortunately for me, by keeping a better pulse on things and making sure your people are happy, you can reduce it. And it's not the end of the world if you did lose somebody.
Yeah.
Important.
Let's talk a little bit about that pulse. You know, there's a lot of people out there that run companies that, you know, that have lost, quote unquote, the pulse of their business. So can you shed some light more on what the pulse means to you? And how you maintain that, you know, on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis?
You know, I think one of the things that I've somewhat learned a little bit more in recent years is that, you know, you there as an owner, you do definitely get a little bit, you get a different perspective than anybody else might in the company. So I've been a big fan of like, having an implementer or a COO, like somebody that is more on the organizational side of things, your right-hand man. And basically, you know, I don't even consider myself the person that actually runs the company. I consider myself the visionary. And then I have somebody that what I would consider runs the company in the, on the day-to-day business. And between the two of us, I think it's easier to get a better pulse on it. Because I think if I went off of my own judgments or what I see, a lot of times it's completely different than the people that actually work in the business. And I find it, you know, in recent years, I found it very, very interesting of how sometimes different those perspectives are. Most of the time people like, you know, it just kind of shocking to me how much like he reports, like how much people want to please me. And I like that's a great aspect that, you know, you have people wanting to do their best, but at the same time, I want to make sure that I get the, you know, the accurate feedback or tell me when I, you know, if this, my ideas are crazy, give me a little bit of pushback. You know, I try as much as you try to encourage, you know, like positive feedback or criticism, let's call it. It is very difficult for somebody to openly or, you know, try to tell me that idea isn't as good as I think it is, you know?
So based on what you've said here and what I've taken is you're placing, you know, a very organized right-hand man basically to help you with the organization of the company. And then you continue to create the vision for the company. And then you share that vision with the various, you know, partners and employees that you have to continue to, you know, inspire them towards reaching specific goals as a collective. Is that what I'm getting from you?
Yeah, that's very much so. And sometimes even when I'll even just share my vision with my COO and then have him disseminate it with the company, because it's a little bit, once you get the buy-in from, you know, with the key members right off the bat, a lot of times it's more widely accepted. Before, the old me would just use this, hey guys, here's this great idea. I talk about the idea, I get, yay, everybody's super excited. And then, you know, they walk out of the room and it might not be as, it's hard to gauge if that was excitement or just like, all right, you're the boss. All right, we'll do it.
You know, I'd be curious as to how much of the idea that you have that you need to have created before you share it with somebody to then implement it, you know? Like how deep do you need to have had that idea, you know, percolate or have created before you share it, you know, because sometimes, you know, I'll do the same thing. I've got an idea and I share it, but then there wasn't a whole bunch of thought, you know, in vetting behind that idea. But, you know, it's just one of those crazy thoughts. I don't know how much.
Yeah, especially if you think you have yourself a home run. You know, if you think this is a home run, I don't even need to vet it out. I mean, almost it's with very rare exception. Does it not help you to thoroughly vet out your ideas, or even if it's just vetting out the game plan to rolling it out, the implementation side of things?
Well, and that's something, as we know out there, all of you founders, I mean, there are systems that we have to put in place to every single one of our ideas almost. And you know, being respectful for the amount of time that it takes to implement is also something that we would strongly suggest, but also, you know, having team, just like what Jeff is saying. And that's really what makes a good CEO and leader of a company, to be able to, you know, establish that vision, to then share that vision and articulate it and have almost have had those thoughts well thought out, you know, in kind of a closed group with those leaders of the company, and then, you know, sharing it out. But, and this is good. So what are you excited about in the future of the development of your company? I know you had alluded to the, you know, kind of this RV idea where you're having reviews and whatnot, but what else are you excited about?
With my next step, you know, I think a lot of it is just, I think the big push that we're going to make is more partnership within the RVing community with the actual repair facilities. And because one of the things that we're seeing right now just in the industry is just a backlog of RVs needing repairs, not being able to get things taken care of in a timely manner. And really the most repair facilities are either short on staff or short on parts with more business than they know what to do with. So I would imagine that sometime soon, you know, a correction is probably going to take place. And I want to really make that, whether you get a warranty or not, I want to make that RV repair more easy to do, easy to vet, and easy to service. Because, I mean, we have a lot of people that, you know, you're living in your RV. If you need it to get, you can't really drop it off. You know, like we have a lot of full timers that like, that's where they stay. They can't sit around for a couple weeks. They need to get somebody out there, and it really puts, you know, a damper on their whole vacation and their lifestyle if they're not able to take care of that a little bit easier and better.
Yeah. I mean, I could see that industry just exploding right now. I mean, look at that. We just had a 2020. Everybody's, you know, wanting to, well, for those that wanted to travel, a lot of people did the, you know, the nationwide, you know, national park tours. They're getting RVs, they're getting minivans, you know, all these van lifers, as we say. But yeah, there's a lot of, and then that means a lot of use on an RV, and that means repair. So I think you're certainly on the pulse there of the business. How have you, you know, and this may be a question for later, but just with the integration of technology, I know you said you had the LMS, but do you have any ideas as to how you would develop more or integrate more technology inside of your corporation?
Yeah, I think we're pretty good. You know, we always try to find, I guess, you know, stay up to date as far as the technology that we use. As far as like a CRM system, like I think we have our intercompany technology pretty well up to date. But, you know, one of the things that I'm looking to build at some point might be like an app. And I always kind of think of like for our customers. We've actually partnered with a lot of companies that will actually, you get a free app that helps you track, you know, like find your campgrounds, find the service stations. I mean, it's, you know, many, many millions of dollars went, tens of millions of dollars went into this app. So we partnered with like some of the best app companies for our customers. But, you know, eventually what I would like to do is build an app that would have our repair facilities on them. So you could kind of order it like an Uber, like, hey, I got to get, I got to get my AC fixed. These are the days that I'm going to be here. This is what's wrong with it. Boom. And then you could find somebody that will contact you and arrange that repair while you're in your campground, so you don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Geolocation. Yeah, geolocation API. That's that is good, man. Well, man, we're excited for you and the growth of your company and just continued, you know, the continued culture that you've created there of winners, but also of people that have true integrity for what they do, the customers they serve, and you're just continually trying to solve problems. And that's what I've seen from you so far. You know, it's been real good getting to know you, you know, throughout now our about a month or so, and just continue to develop that friendship. So how do we get a hold of you? And, you know, what is some way that our community here can help you?
Well, if you ever want to learn more about our business, we're at wholesalewarranties.com. Our phone number is 800-939-2806, or jeff@wholesalewarranties.com is my email.
All right. And then as far as our community here, do you have any asks or is there any ways that we can help you?
Asks of the community. Can't think of anything right off the top of my mind.
No problem.
Very, very specific, like.
Yeah, no worries. Well, you know, thank you so much for joining us today on the Founders Odyssey podcast. And if you guys like today's episode, feel free to subscribe to our YouTube channel, as well as you can listen to us on Spotify. We also have some great episodes of people that have raised millions of funding, taken their company IPO, and really are just amazing CEOs of their company. So, once again, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.